This is The Trend on WNIN. I'm Cass Harrington. The topic of immigration reform has become more visible and partisan in the past month, particularly regarding the influx of young Central Americans crossing the southern border. The reasons for immigration involve economic, social, or political factors, but one of the main reasons people migrate to the U.S. is to flee poverty in their home countries. On today's program, we're taking a look at the pursuit of the American dream here in Evansville and southwestern Indiana on a segment we're calling Immigrant Success, which obviously takes a different form for each individual who moves here. First up, I visited Thai Papaya on Evansville's east side. Owner Joe Pochinant expanded just last August into a larger restaurant. He's owned it for about 5 years now, and that expansion cost more than $1 million. Pochinant moved here in 1975, and at that time, he had no intention of opening a restaurant. He came here to study and planned to return home to Thailand to be a banker.
First of all, I never dreamed to be like this, but it happened. You know, I'm look back, I come here for nothing. Only one suitcase I got. That's all I got. Two suitcase, maybe the most. That's all I got.
So you started working as a dishwasher.
Yep, in the beginning. First job of my life. First job.
That's a success story if I ever heard one.
That's what I was saying. Ain't it funny, open your own restaurant?
Well, so 5 years ago, you opened Thai Papaya. Maybe it was five and a half, six?
About 2008.
Why a restaurant?
So I got hired from a Rick Sam company, Kosher. Now it's a Barry Plastic now. Okay, they bought it over. So I worked there for 7 years. And then one day, the rumors start talking about they lay off people. I just opened one day, I didn't know with my wife at home, I just opened my big mouth. Hey, they're going to lay off. And my wife said, what are you going to do? You're too old to go back to look for another job. I said, what do you want, what you want to do? She said, well, open a restaurant. That's her idea come from. So I said, well, how are we going to do? We had to find people, how to manage and all. So we got the money to invest. Then we find out we got a couple Thai people here can help us open, because the reason why Evansville never have Thai restaurant, because it's hard to find people to cook. I have 15 people. 15 people have a job, make money, pay taxes. The money is going local. Evansville town never have Thai restaurant. Never have. We set in history. Real cuisine. We are the first one to land it here. That's why I always tell people, land opportunity. If you work hard at it, and you can do anything you want. Work sometimes 6 months without no day off. When I married her that day, I went to work that night.
That was Joe Pochinant. He and his wife, Tim, own Thai Papaya on Evansville's east side. The immigrant population continues to increase here in Evansville and the rest of the country. According to the most recent census data, more than 12%, or 1 in 8 Americans, is foreign-born. I spoke with Indiana Governor Mike Pence's Director of Community Affairs, Diego Morales, to hear what this means for the state of Indiana. So I wanted to hear a little bit about what you're seeing from the ground, if you will, the conversations that are going on, who's coming to Indiana, and maybe what their struggles have been. Because, you know, as the show is about success, it's not the same for every person. Some people might have a very different definition of what that looks like.
Sure, sure. Great question. You know, you said at the beginning, I was privileged to be able to travel the whole state, traveling the whole state since 2002. And I've been in, we have 92 counties in the state, and I've been in every single city and town in the 92 counties. And you said it right. You know, I consider myself a soldier in the field, going out there and just meet, you know, different types of people. To answer your question, I've been blessed to represent the governor's office at different naturalization ceremonies, which, by the way, for me, it is one of the most special jobs.
Well, you're seeing a new wave of Hoosiers.
Yes, and I'm going to take you a little bit back why it's so special for me, because I went through that process back in 2008
Well, let's backtrack a little bit, sure, then, and talk about your story. I know that, well, you went to IU, mm-hmm, and you worked very hard to pay your tuition. You worked like 16-hour days during the summer in a factory. But also, you were an infantryman in the Army. You have two master's degrees. You really worked your way up into the ranks of politics to get to where you are. But in your younger years, when you were at IU or before then, what did success look like for you? Was it a life in politics, or was it something even simpler than that?
Well, again, another great question. When I arrived into this country, I already knew in my mind I was coming here as a Latino. I knew I was coming here as a minority, and that if I wanted to reach something, I need to work harder, twice, if not more. But it wasn't a problem for me, because I already knew, because we already used to work harder anyway, so it was nothing new. Everything I've been doing in my life, I've been doing it, through hard work.
You're listening to The Trend on WNIN. Today we're talking about immigrant success and what that means to the people who move here. Right now I'm talking to Diego Morales, the Director of Community Affairs for Governor Mike Pence. And that seems to be a shared narrative with immigrants who come to our country over centuries, really, that they work very hard with little resources, sometimes just the change in their pockets. But from the people you've met at these naturalization ceremonies, from the new citizens, what do you think, what are they saying? What are the conversations like about social mobility in Indiana? Is it where it should be?
I think we can always do better, no matter what. But what I hear a lot is that they are happy, just to be that opportunity to become a U.S. citizen. To me, the most beautiful country in the world,
Really? Guatemala is beautiful too.
It is.
I love Panajachel. Like,
well, that is the most beautiful lake in the world. Yes. So I have to say that. here's what I see. Usually you get 70 to 80 new Americans every other week. Mm. And they're not only from Latin America. They're from Africa, from Asia, from Europe. I see many, many of them from the UK or from Germany, becoming an American. And usually I ask them why, and they said, we love our countries, but we think America is a better place for us and our families.
Well, so what could be better? What would make it an easier transition for someone moving here or wanting to start a restaurant or a business?
Well, I think that you ask a great question. Our governor has been making our state very, very accessible, transparent, as well as easy for people to start their own businesses. He encouraged everybody to, become small business owners, and we work with some agencies under the governor's office to help provide that opportunity. For instance, he passed laws, for veterans or for, mm-hmm, minority business owners, not just Latinos, but it can be any other community, to get contracts with the state. So he's doing a great job, when it comes to that, when it comes to economic development. And I can go back briefly. We had our third Latino Expo this year, mm-hmm, a couple months ago, and the governor has been there every year. And, I think that's the best way to encourage others to come together and to say, hey, we are here to help and to support. We are here to listen, so let us know how we can help.
Well, I think it's very striking, particularly since, I guess, outspoken conservatives like the Tea Party have been heavy-handed on immigration in the media. And I wanted to know, how have you been relating to other conservatives in the party when it comes to immigration policy?
You know, When it comes to that, I just gonna share my own experience because I cannot talk about anybody else. I feel if you go out there, if you see some of the tea party, as you said, usually what I do is go there, very respectful, talk to them, do my job, and in turn, I get respect from them. And many times, we don't even talk about, I guess, issues like immigration.
Has it posed a problem for Pence moving forward with any of these discussions or...
Well, you know, obviously, you know, usually when it comes to this, I can tell you, fortunately or unfortunately, immigration is a federal issue rather than state. But what I can say is that the governor has been supportive. Last year, he passed bills supporting some in-state tuition. Obviously, for some of our Hoosier students, you know, that they came here when they little. So
the dreamers,
exactly. But mm-hmm. but that's on the record. As anybody can look for that, and mm-hmm. and he signed those bills into law, you know. But when it comes to some of his initiatives in the future, I think now the governor is focusing more on economic development and on the state, and of course. Obviously, he's willing to work with the federal government, but again, that's more of a federal government issue rather than state.
Well, Diego, my last question,
sure.
Based on what you're seeing, you really are at the forefront of change with Indiana, the direction it's going, new people living here. What are your projections for the next 5, 10, 20 years for the state of Indiana regarding immigration?
We have around 400,000 Latinos in the Hoosier State. Many of them are from Mexico, and this is why we have a consulate in Indianapolis, to help mainly people from Mexico. And then the rest, you will see people from Guatemala, from Honduras, from El Salvador, from the Dominican Republic, from Puerto Rico, from Colombia, Venezuela. And I believe we're going to continue to grow. I believe the Latino community is going to continue to grow. And I can tell you right now, if you go to an elementary school or high school, you will see them. You know, when I moved here in my senior year, I was the only Latino in my high school. We were only like three minorities. I was the only Latino, an African-American, and an Asian. And everybody else were white. Now, when I go back to my high school, you see more Latinos. So it's a good sign. We're going to continue to grow. And my message to them is, I get invited to speak at different schools, is to encourage them to get prepared, to get an education, to start thinking on going to college and, make a difference within our community and make a difference and give back to our state and to our country. So that's what I think.
All right. Well, Diego Morales, thank you so much for talking with me.
Gracias. Gracias por la invitación.
That was me talking with Diego Morales, the Director of Community Affairs for Governor Mike Pence. We're going to take a quick break here on The Trend. When we come back, we're going to talk with an immigration attorney. Also, we'll revisit Thai papaya.
Good afternoon. You're listening to The Trend on 88.3 WNIN-FM. Support comes in part from Raven Tire and Auto Service, a proud sponsor of WNIN programming. Raven offers a selection of tire brands, including Michelin and Goodyear, along with complete auto service and recommended maintenance by trained technicians. Information on the web at raventire.com. Let's return now to Cass Harrington and the discussion on immigrant success in the tri-state on The Trend.
Good afternoon, you're listening to The Trend. I'm Cass Harrington. We've heard a few things about success, immigrant success, and what that looks for. Looks like. But coming up in the program, we're going to hear about maybe a few challenges to that success. I spoke with local immigration attorney David Garada, and he says he often sees that success is hindered by the process of filing for federal documents like temporary workers' visas or green cards. And I spoke with him about his practice representing both businesses and individuals. You represent both businesses and employment-based issues, but also individuals.
Yes, ma'am. Family-based cases, that's right.
So this program this week, we're talking about immigration success, what that looks like for someone coming here looking for a job or starting a business or whatever that is for them.
Right.
Is it a case or a common thread where the success of the immigrant or whoever is working, the success of the employee is in line with the success of the business you're representing, where they see that their success is contingent on their employee success?
Very much so. Very much so. When we began working in the immigration field of law, we started primarily assisting businesses who had recruited foreign workers, individuals from foreign countries, to work here in Evansville for their respective businesses. Because a variety of these foreign nationals possess skills and talents that had been, and to a certain extent still is, difficult to come by here in our field of American workers in this area. So when we are able, as we assist the businesses to obtain immigration benefits, specifically a temporary visa, which allows them to not only live and be present here in Evansville, but also to work. You see, there's a number of visas where you're eligible to live here, but not necessarily work here. Well, so for our business community, when we can assist them in obtaining a visa for a new foreign worker, not only to live here, but also to work here, it is a mutual success. And it's becoming more and more thought of as a success currently because employers are finding it difficult to weave their way through the morass of these immigration rules and regulations in order to get to that success. The basic rules for employing a foreign worker have not changed, but the enforcement of immigration and the limits, there's limits or quotas in how many workers can obtain certain visas. And we're running up against these quotas more and more, given the nature of our economy. There are more and more foreign workers.
Let me interrupt you for a second.
Sure.
So for quotas, you're talking about there's a certain limit of how many workers' visas can be here in Evansville?
Yeah, not necessarily in Evansville, but nationally. For example, one of the type of employment-based visas that we work with businesses a lot on is called the H-1B visa. Okay, that's a professional-based visa primarily geared to individuals who have obtained a bachelor's degree either in their home country or here and possess certain skills like computer engineers, technicians, software engineers, accountants, these types of areas of expertise. There are only 65,000 H-1B visas that are allotted by the Immigration Service annually. Years ago, there had been 120,000. That was limited back down to 65,000. And a few years ago, when these applications would be filed for these 65,000 visas, they would cap out, what we call cap out, the very first day that the visas were made eligible. There's a certain date when you can begin to apply for these visas. And after that number is hit, even if you have a qualified foreign national who fits all of the immigration rules, you are, the employer's ready to pay all the fee, they've done everything right, they've followed the law, but they're still not able to fill this position with a foreign worker of choice because there are not enough visas to go around. And this is one of the issues going on in this national talk of immigration reform. A lot of people talk about, you know, pathway to citizenship for undocumented workers, and I realize there's a lot of well-founded objections to that and a lot of controversy about that. I'm not speaking about that in particular. On behalf of a lot of businesses I work with, they are concerned that, hey, we do everything we're supposed to, but we still can't get this worker here because there's no more visas available and we have to wait till next year. So on those occasions, when we get that visa for that worker, it is, going back to your original point, a huge success, both for the employer and for the employee. It's very difficult when I file these petitions for a lot of employers only to say, hey, the Immigration Service has sent it back, not because we did anything wrong, but because no more visas are available. And that's very frustrating.
So what you're saying essentially is that the demand for migrant work is there, but that quota is not filling that demand.
And that's right. That's right. The demand is much higher than the quota is. And you mentioned migrant workers. I myself and at my firm, we haven't worked yet that much with migrant workers, but I'm aware of through the people that I deal with in the American Immigration Lawyers Association that those areas where the migrant workers are hugely in need, you know, California, the vineyards out there, other large agricultural areas where they need large masses of people.
Like seasonal work.
Seasonal work, exactly. You hit it right on the head. The demand exceeds the quota, and it's just becomes very difficult. So when, again, you're able to successfully guide your client or the company business through this maze of immigration rules and regulations and beat the quota, so to speak, great success. A lot of work involved.
Well, let's talk about immigrants who plan to live here permanently and, okay. and that process. What are the biggest obstacles you're seeing or in your 20 years practice, what kind of things have you observed?
In terms of the obstacles to
citizenship or finding work or employers helping their employees get the citizenship they need, whatever that looks like.
Wow, that's such a multidimensional matter. First of all, you mentioned citizenship. Many of the individuals that want to live and work here permanently, they're not necessarily, although they're interested in citizenship, they're not necessarily seeking that out. What they primarily want and essentially need is permanent residency that allows them to live and work here permanently. We commonly refer to that as the green card. They want the green card. It's a card that says that they are a lawful permanent resident. Not that they're a citizen, not that they can vote because they do not yet have that eligibility, but they can live and work here permanently. Okay. The obstacles that many people that I see face with regard to that is, well, first of all, the process to obtain that green card, so to speak, can be rather exorbitant, quite expensive. For example, if you are family-based and you've married, you're a foreign national who's married an American citizen, and that American citizen spouse can now sponsor you for the green card, just the filing fee alone has nothing to do with the legal fees or anything that the lawyer is doing, but the filing fee by the Immigration Service alone exceeds $1,200. So that's just the filing fee, you see. So that is a big obstacle because many people don't have that that money that they can they can put forward.
Plus, is that paperwork translated?
Is that paperwork translated? Well, it would have to be. I mean, if you are someone that does not have English as your primary language and you only speak in some other foreign language, we would have to translate. And that and if the expenses involved doesn't include that I just mentioned, many times I'll have to hire a translator and get documents translated. There are many immigration issues that can come up along the way. You know, for example, you know, if a foreign national, while he or she's here on a temporary visa, like a tourist visa, if they are caught, you know, say they've got an international driver's license and they're speeding, and so like a lot of people do, they just plead guilty to it, pay the ticket, and go on. Well, depending on the severity of that admission or of that crime or infraction, that could cause a problem once the Immigration Service finds out about it, because we have certain, or there is within the immigration law, certain types of crimes, wrongdoing, so to speak, bad acts that can prevent someone from proceeding with their paperwork, and they could be turned around.
Yeah.
So the laws are very difficult to maneuver.
Well, I had a question kind of related to that. For employers, do they want to keep that talent even if they're at risk of losing their immigration status?
Generally, Cass, yes, they do, because employers know, given the investigation and homework they've done into these types of immigration cases, that, and going into it, it will be a substantial investment. And once they have committed to that investment, they're committed. And even though certain hurdles may come up along the way that drive up cost, either with the immigration service or legal fee cost or whatever, I have found, fortunately, obviously, that many of my clients will stay the course. Because the demand for foreign workers here in our community to do a lot of, you know, wonderful things that contribute to the growth and development of our economy is substantial. Very seldom in my experience, Cass, have I seen an employer say, oh, gee, well, we've spent enough, we're going to back out now. Once they've committed and they've started investing some money, they go the full course as far as the immigration will let them go.
You're listening to The Trend on WNIN. I'm Cass Harrington talking to local immigration attorney David Garadas. He works for Zimmer, Stamen, Weitzel, and Shoulders, and he's also an active member of the American Immigrant Lawyers Association. More of our interview coming up on The Trend. And it sounds like the most prohibitive factors are coming from the federal level. What about here locally in Evansville? Is there anything that's slowing the progress of immigration here locally or the success of people who move here?
You know, I'm proud to say that if there's anything locally going on vis-a-vis immigration, it's not slowing it down and it's not presenting any hurdles. I have yet to find a local representative. And oftentimes when I have some tough cases, I'll reach out to our local congressmen, you know, and senators. I mean, Senator Lugar, when he was in office, he had a great staff there that was very helpful in a lot of cases. Congressman Bouchon in particular, I've worked with him. I've spoken with him. Very helpful. And I say that on behalf of all the rest of our federal legislators that represent people in this community. In terms of any more localized government officials and that sort of thing, nothing has discouraged the development of immigration in this community. In fact, I've found it encouraging. As a matter of fact, from time to time, I'll have judges who will call me. They have individuals that come before them with some criminal issues, and the court is aware, although they don't do a lot in the immigration field per se, but because they're aware of some of these things out there on the federal level, they'll call and say, hey, you know, is there something that we can do or should do to try to help this person along? A lot of criminal defense attorneys will contact me. They're getting ready to work out some sort of plea agreement, but on behalf of their client or handle different types of criminal issues with regard to those from other countries. And they're concerned, wait a minute, what they're dealing with might have some effect. What can we do to help to try to, you know, keep from causing you further problems? There's a lot of Hispanic outreach organizations in this community. You know, the Catholic Charities is very helpful. There's an organization known as OLA. So if I have an issue for which I could use some local assistance, it's there for me. Evansville is great. I take great pride in practicing immigration in this area. And I see a lot of benefit in practicing immigration in this area versus my brothers and sisters who practice in larger cities. They have a lot of issues that they deal with that fortunately I do not.
And you're observing some statewide trends as well. Mm-hmm. You mentioned yes. There's now 94 practicing immigration lawyers in Indiana.
That's right. As a member of the immigration, or as a member of the American Immigration Lawyers Association, I've developed associations and relationships with a lot of our immigration attorneys across the state of Indiana, those who practice extensively in immigration law. Most states, not all, have a chapter within the American Immigration Lawyers Association. Indiana, fortunately, is one of them. I currently serve as secretary, and through that work, we've seen a bit of a rise, not significant, since I've been practicing in immigration law. But we're reaching 100, and, you know, there's other states now that I'm proud to say have fewer than that.
So. Well, David, to wrap things up, 20 years is a long time to be doing this, and I'm sure you've seen some trends. Certainly things could be better.
Right, right.
But what do you see?
Children who come into the United States many times are brought in by their parents. I mean, they're children. They don't have any choice in the process. Even if perhaps what their parents did in getting in was not the right way of entering this country and maybe even was illegal in what they did, well, these are kids. Last year, a new program was started called DACA, D-A-C-A. It stands for Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals. Deferred action means the Immigration Service, through its enforcement mechanism, will not take action against these children so long as they meet certain requirements, and we file a petition for them, and they can get temporary work authorization. That's a good development, giving them something that they can do in the interim to try to protect themselves from being immediately deported when, again, they weren't brought in of their own volition anyway.
Have you seen cases of the so-called dreamers or students here maybe studying in college who are at risk of being deported?
Have I seen some of those? Yes. Of course, since we are a smaller community, I don't see as many as my brothers and sisters have. But I have relationships with the international student directors at both our local universities, University of Evansville and USI. And we've had a few of those cases come up. And I'm proud to say, of those cases that we've dealt with, they were not deported.
How are you able to maneuver that? Do you have to have really good relations with federal agencies that just...
It's good to have good relationships, and I am still in the process of developing those relationships as we speak, of
sure.
course. But a lot of times it's more a matter of getting the person in, seriously looking at their situation, and knowing the different immigration avenues that are within our legal system. One would be surprised that, particularly with regard to university students, you see, if they're already in the university, that means that they had some status that allowed them to start because, you know, our universities are good. I mean, you have to have certain credentials, you know, to even enroll.
Mm-hmm.
And generally speaking, they meet those credentials. But then if an issue crops up while they're here, they risk deportation. Then we'll get involved. Another thing that comes up that we find that we're able to help people like this, and I had a case not too long ago, a student, was doing everything right, in fact, a great student in school, but he was running up against a problem, and we were concerned that he might be deported. So we had to, you know, roll up our sleeves, look at this case, and ultimately he did have to go to immigration court in Chicago. I represented him there before the immigration judge in Chicago, and we were able to persuade the judge that there was a benefit within the immigration system that would help him and keep him here, and so the immigration judge allowed us to proceed. You see, when you talk about deportation, and many undocumented workers and individuals and those who do not have legal status are rightfully concerned about that, before the deportation literally can take place, though, these individuals have a right to be heard before an immigration judge, and not always, of course, and unfortunately many times this is not the case, But sometimes, though, there are still those circumstances and those cases where a relief or a benefit will be found, sometimes within immigration court, and then with the approval of the immigration judge, we can then go back to the immigration service and proceed a different route. And that's been some of the experiences I've seen. Over the years I've been doing this here in Evansville, I'm proud to say there's many more wins than losses. We want to keep it that way, of course.
Well, David, thank you for
my pleasure.
Coming on the program.
Thank you for inviting me. I've enjoyed this opportunity, Cass.
You're listening to The Trend on WNIN. That was me talking with David Garatas. He practices immigration law right here in Evansville. Well, we're going to slow down the pace here. We've reached kind of the last final segment on The Trend, our conversation about immigration success. And I wanted to go back to Thai Papaya, where we started this conversation today. I spoke with the owners, Tim and Joe Pachanan, but coming up on this segment, we're going to talk to Nicholas, their son, to hear his plans for the family business.
My name is Nicholas Pachanan. I'm the son of the owners of Thai Papaya Cuisine, Joe Pachanan and Tim Pachanan. And I basically manage the day-to-day operations here and everything else. I'm a senior at USI. I'm studying economics. I'm also majoring in accounting, finance, and business administration. We were kind of forced to start the restaurant business because my dad was working at Rexam before the restaurant started, and then Berry Plastics bought out Rexam, and he was afraid he might lose his job, so dilly-dilled around with the dream of opening a restaurant, so we actually did because we were fearful of him losing his job or getting laid off, so we would have no income. I'm happy to help out on all that, but, you know, it's providing me for my college experience, so, I mean, it's a fun thing to do, but I have other dreams to follow, but eventually I will decide to take it over, but not as a full-time of what they're doing, because I'm starting my other businesses as well. But, yeah, maybe you could do a story about that.
What other businesses?
Well, it's actually two businesses. One of them is basically a cosplay business, you know, cosplay. Mm-hmm. So my guys are very, very talented. We're going to use 3D printing and all these, like, we're going to craft these, you know, Star Wars is. The Stormtrooper, Star Vader, all that costumes. We're going to actually make movie quality, and, you know, we're going to sell them and all that, right? So that's the first business I was going to start up. And then the second business is going to be a nonprofit organization where it's basically where we dress up as those guys and we go do hospital visits for kids and, you know, do funerals and birthday parties and all that. I mean, yeah, the restaurant's good and all that. I mean, it's a very honorable thing to do, but I want to do something for society. For me, success is making a difference in one's life. You know, doing what you really love. If you are able to manage to do what you love, and then I would find that as success. Like, if I get my two businesses to start up and running, I mean, that's what I really love to do, and that I find that as success. Even if it's not going to be, like, you know, becoming multi-billion company, something small, but I'm still loving what I'm doing, then I find that as success.
Son of Joe and Tim, who own Thai Papaya on Evansville's east side. We're going to take one last break here on The Trend. When we come back, we're going to talk with Erica Collings, who is a home visitor for the Community Action Plan of Evansville.
Good afternoon. You're listening to The Trend on 88.3 WNIN FM. We'll go back in just a moment to Cass Harrington and the discussion of immigrant success in the tri-state. Support comes from Tin Man Brewing Company, now featuring small batch releases every Friday at 6 p.m. First come, first served. Tin Man Brewing, located at 1430 West Franklin Street in Evansville, Indiana, or on the web at tinmanbrewing.com.
You're listening to The Trend. I'm Cass Harrington. Right now I'm joined in the studio by Erica Collings. She's a home visitor at CAPE, or Community Action Plan of Evansville, And, well, first of all, good afternoon, Erica. Thanks for joining me.
Sure, no problem.
Well, anything you heard on today's conversation that kind of, I don't know, set you off?
Yeah, I was just thinking about, I don't know why they call it green card, because it's not really green.
How would you describe a green card?
To me, the green card, it looks more like silver with a little bit of green, but it's not really green, like all the way green.
Okay, well, so clarity, fact check right there. It's not all the way green.
No, it's not.
In case anybody was wondering. Well, Erica, you are a home visitor.
Yes.
What exactly does that look like for CAPE? What do you do?
What I do is I go to people houses and I work with the kids from 0 to 3 years old. What I do is I just have them ready to go to school. Like I try to work on like the fine, gross motor skills, cognitive and all that kind of stuff, that it's going to get them ready to go to Head Start.
Mm-hmm. So kind of early childhood development type
yes.
work. And a lot of time that I know that involves playing, teaching parents how to play with their children without spending money, right?
Yes, that's what we do. We try to show the parents that you can have a good time without spending all kinds of money. You can have toys that it's homemade toys. Like you don't even have to buy Play-Doh. You can make your own Play-Doh and you can have fun even with just being outside in the grass and just teaching the kids the colors just with the grass and the cars and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. I'm thinking pots and pans too.
Yes.
That was my favorite when I was a kid.
Oh, they're great. They love them.
Well, tell us why this would be important for the development of a child here.
Well, especially the families that I see, they are Spanish-speaking families. So, of course, the kids, they don't know any English. So what I do is I try to start with English like a little bit at a time. They know that when I say thank you, they have to say you're welcome. But when mom say gracias, they know that it's mom and she's speaking Spanish. Hmm. But I have to answer to my teacher in English. So I try to do that. And, of course, the kids, they have to have, like, the small muscles ready to grab a pen. And they need to socialize. And sometimes that's kind of difficult for the kids to socialize. So that's what we do.
Well, and I'd like to talk more about the significance of visiting homes. You know, I have visited different health clinics set up for people who, you know, need free health services. But the problem often is getting those people to leave their homes and go and leave their jobs. And so it seems like the home visits is really effective for outreach for nonprofits like CAPE.
Yes. It's very important, especially with like I said, Spanish-speaking families, because some of them, especially moms, they don't drive. So if you go to their house, it just makes it a whole lot easier for them. And we bring snack with us, and we teach the parents to have, like, a healthy snack with things that they are not really that expensive. And it's going to be fun for the kids, because even I have one case that I had this kid, she didn't like to eat celery. So I just told her the story about the very hungry caterpillar. And we made a celery caterpillar with cream cheese. And then mom was like, oh my God, she's eating celery. And she said, no, mom, it's not celery. It's the very hungry caterpillar. So I made her eat that. And I show mom that there's ways that you can go around and just make them eat good.
Mm-hmm. Well, from what you've seen, what is kind of your assessment of needs from the immigrant Latino community here in Evansville, or maybe, you know, even challenges they face that prohibit their social mobility and their economic growth here in Evansville?
Well, first of all, I think it's important for them to know, like, an immigration place where they can go and ask questions, because some of them, they ask me questions that I don't know how to answer, so I have to look around, but it's very hard to find somebody that speaks Spanish. And that's really most of the problem, that some people, they really don't speak English, and sometimes they take their kids that they are in school, they're like elementary school, and you don't get the whole message because they are not translators. So there are some, the ones that I like to say big words, that they don't understand, so they cannot translate it to the parents.
Mm-hmm.
So I think mostly it's like bilingual things.
What specifically, kind of what sorts of documents? More like tax or legal, or what are you talking about?
Yeah, I think it will be more like legal, because some of them, they have all what they need to become legal, but they are afraid to go and file all the paperwork because they say, what if I messed up in something?
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to send me back home. And I don't want to go back home because I know I'm not going to be good there. And I have my children here. And I don't want to leave my children alone. So that's one of the main problems that I think I'm seeing here.
Mm-hmm. So dealing with the formalities of government and filing paperwork.
Yes.
That's something that the immigration attorney mentioned as well. And sometimes it's cost prohibitive. They can't afford the filing fee.
Yes. Yes, it's very expensive. But you know what? I hear so many families that they say, I do whatever I need to do to get that money, but I just need somebody to help me. So that's what I think the biggest problem will be.
Well, Erica, you mentioned right when we opened up the microphones, you mentioned your green card. And I wanted to hear from you why you decided to move, you know, all the way here to Evansville from Guatemala.
Well, I moved here in 2006. I finished college over there and I just needed a break. And I have never seen the snow. And I was like, I really want to see the snow. I was really excited. So I knew somebody that lived here, and she was like, you can come and visit me. And I was like, yes, I'm going to be there. So I came here in June of 2006. And then in September, I met this guy that I really liked. And now he's my husband.
So what started out as a visit turned out into your life?
Yes.
Well, something that's graced the headlines this past month is the number of Central Americans, many from Guatemala, the young children who are crossing the border illegally. And often, I mean, their parents are sending them alone, you know, sometimes 10 years old, younger. And I wanted to know if, I know you went back home last month,
mm-hmm.
you know, what you think about that?
First of all, I really don't understand how some parents have the heart to send their kids, because children, they need their parents. They really do. And I know situation is hard, but it's a child. And I, like 2 days ago, I think, I saw on the news, because I like to watch the news in my country, I saw that they have a commercial in Guatemala saying, don't send your kids. And to me, it was like, wow, they are even making commercials.
Like so PSAs. It's real,
yeah, so it's really, really a big problem. And it was saying, and a commercial was just like, don't try to chase the American dream, try to make the Guatemalan dream. And I thought that was like really powerful, you know? But to be honest, I don't know what they are saying, why they are doing that. I just know that somebody started the rumor saying that if you send a minor to America, just let them get caught for immigration and they're going to get the residence card. So everybody started going crazy. They were like, yes, I'm going to send my kids because then they're going to be residents and then I'm going to be able to go there.
Mm-hmm.
But it really, it's not that easy.
Well, as a matter of fact, you know of somebody who came with her son, correct?
Yes, yes. She is 19 years old. She came here like 3 months ago. And It did happen. She came here and she got caught, and they asked her if she had any family here, and she said yes. So they sent her here to Evansville. But her son, she is 19. She looks like a 14-year-old girl. She really does. She is malnourished. You can tell that she didn't grow the way that she was supposed to, just because she didn't have enough vitamins. And the little boy, he looks like he's going to be a year old. He is really, really small, and he is not as alert as you expect for his age. But when she came here, immigration was kind enough, and they gave her medications, and he is on vitamins. And it was so bad that the first time that he ate, like 3 times a day, he gets sick of his stomach because he was not used to eating.
When you see that, and then I imagine you see some, I don't know, often maybe tragic situations too on your home visits of people who left oppressive governments and extreme poverty. What do you have in your mind, an idea for a viable solution for people who move here? I mean, Obama put in, I think it was $2 billion to build up the border and possibly send people home. And I wanted to know what do you think, based on what you observe, what would be ideal?
I think it would be ideal to have the people that they really want to stay here, and they are trying to make a difference to the country. They are trying to give something that it's going to be good for the country. I just think that's, if they are going to make a difference, I think it will be good for them to go to all the steps that you have to do to get your residence.
Hmm. Is it something you see you are doing yourself here in Evansville?
Yes, I'm trying. I'm really trying to make a difference. I'm trying to help people, because when I came here, my English was not good at all. And I know that I had a need when I came here, and I'm just trying to help the people, because when I was on that situation, somebody helped me. So I'm kind of like paying forward.
Well, take us to that. Since this is a conversation about immigrant success, from your eyes, when you first came here, did you have an idea of what that looked like for you?
It was difficult to begin with, just because I was here alone. I didn't have my family. But I saw the opportunity to have a really good life, but I know you have to work hard. The first thing that my first goal was to learn the language. And I tried really hard, and my husband helped me a whole lot. So if I was able to give an advice to people that is coming here, it's just learn the language. Just find a way to learn the language, because that's so important.
Well, Erica Collings, thank you so much for joining me this afternoon. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
That is Erica Collings. She's a home visitor for Community Action Plan here in Evansville. And we've reached the trend here on WNIN. Thank you so much for joining me. We're a production of WNIN-FM. Today's program was engineered by Steve Berger. Our intern is Paula Marisan. The theme music was written by Jeffrey Osman. And I'm Cass Harrington. This is WNIN-FM Evansville, Henderson, and Owensboro.